And everybody has such a good time and they're saying,
that's why you want us to go.
Yeah. It's so humbling to stay with somebody. But his presentation of the mandala and the elements and the Dhyani Buddhas is just brilliant. Here's Trungpa. Pema Chodron's work is brilliant too, isn't it?
Lama Pema was here and he was going to give a teaching on the art. They see some calories to show.
Yeah. That was the first meditation I did with someone else. That's what I remember she did. Or Ananda Bodhi. Started with her. I was doing one element retreat at least every 2 years with people. But it kind of disappeared. Everybody's happy when somebody new comes because I always give them time to do a recap, which usually takes at least half the class. And then I always forget what I taught before, so I add different things. So they say, oh, I get it. Or, what you said. And tell each other what I said, or what this, whoever. So. You're not getting it back off us. You're not getting it back off us. Bhagavata. Arahata. Sama Sambuddha. Namo I name Tassa, the same. Bhagavata, blessedness. Arahato. Tamer of the serpents. Serpents are the energies. Sama, fully Sambuddhasa, with that state of discovery. Namo Tassa. So I thought I'd start with a hafiz, which I think describes where we got to on this, which is develop a compassionate wish to benefit all beings by this practice. Seeing the suffering of others, develop a compassionate wish to benefit all beings by this practice. And it's the poem I have Fizz, that to me is the most beautiful description of that state of compassion. Once a young man came to me and said, "Dear Master, I am feeling strong and brave today, and I would like to know the truth about all of my attachments." And I replied, "Sweetheart, do you really want me to speak to you about all your attachments? When I can see so clearly you have built with so much care such a great brothel to house all your pleasures. You've even surrounded the whole damn place with armed guards and vicious dogs to protect your desires. So you can sneak away from time to time and try to squeeze light into your parched being from a source as fruitful as a dry date pit that even a bird is wise enough to spit out. or attachments? My dear, let's not speak of those. For her face understands the sufferings of your heart. Her face knows the torments and the agonies that every mind on the way to annihilation in the sun must endure. So at night, in my prayers, I often stop and ask 1,000 angels to join in and applaud. And applaud anything. Anything in this world that can bring your heart comfort. Do you want to hear it again? Once a young man came to me and said, "Dear Master, I'm feeling strong and brave today, and I would like to know the truth about all of my attachments." And I replied, "Attachments, attachments, sweetheart. Do you really want me to speak to you about all your attachments? When I can see so clearly you have built with so much care such a great brothel to house all your pleasure. You've even surrounded the hold on the way to the agonies that all beings on the way to annihilation in the sun must endure. So at night in my prayers, I often stop and ask 1,000 angels to join in and applaud. And applaud anything, anything in this world that can bring your heart comfort." Yeah. Isn't that so beautiful the way it's stated? Isn't it? That is compassion. To understand what people are clinging to and understand their need to cling without judgment. At night in my prayers, I often stop and ask 1,000 angels to applaud. Applaud anything in this world that can bring your heart comfort. It is so beautiful, isn't it? And here it says, "Feel sadness for those who are blindly caught in unhappiness, unable to see how they become trapped by their own habitual aversion, attraction, and lack of awareness. From the pity that arises when seeing this way, develop a compassionate wish to benefit all beings." This practice. That's compassion. Not being right, but realizing how I get caught, how you get caught, and having a sense of kindness when somebody can let go and when they can't. If they can't, sometime they will, so applaud whatever it does give them comfort. Isn't that beautiful? I think that is so beautiful. Let's not judge. Let's be realistic. No? That's so beautiful. The spaciousness of that is so gorgeous. And life is the greatest teacher. Life will eventually tell you, you know, yeah, this feels good today, but another hafiz, right? What was that one? Learn to recognize the counterfeit coins that may buy you just a moment of pleasure, but then drag you for days like a broken man behind a parting counter. Like that truth, like it says, it doesn't say, "I'll give you the rule to It says learn to. And you can't learn something unless you try it. Otherwise, it's not an experience, it's a belief. And beliefs not based on experience are so tricky, aren't they? But it's because it's you hope it's true, but not because I hope it's true, now I'm going to try and see if it works. Is that true? You have to actually have your own experience, don't you? So, I love that poem. It's called "And Applaud." It's so compassionate.
The beliefs and the ideal
are killers. Oh no, sorry.
Well, if you're trying to move out of a state that you know to be a trap and to be unwholesome, but it's a lifetime pattern, you really don't know what something other would even feel like.
That's so right.
Then my understanding was that you can use beliefs or images that care embody the experience you wish to have, so that you can kind of try to invoke it in your being and have the experience of it.
You can do that, but you can't invoke it in your being unless you've actually had the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do is go to a physical sensation, like you were busy being overwhelmed there, and I said, what did it feel like when the water poured down your back?
Right?
So you have to be more confident in invoking another experience.
You have to trust that you actually have had the experience.
But you have. You know you have. Mm-hmm. I can say to you, what was it like when you held your firstborn for the first time?
Mm-hmm.
And then I say to you, what was their skin like?
Uh-huh.
And I say, what were their toenails like? And you can see your mind remember. You see the whole experience softening. Is that true?
Yes.
We all have had all the experiences. It's just that when one comes up and we wish it wasn't there, we think that we have to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't make the space bigger and say, and then there is also the first time I ever made chocolate fudge and how proud I was. Or, you know? That's what I was talking about, the first.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in one state, you perceive according to that state. So you change the state, or you change the perception, and the state changes. So you're in a state of being caught in something. Then you immediately imagine, you realize that, oh yeah, but I haven't always been caught in it.
Mm.
Yeah? Or as my beloved teacher Namjoa Rinpoche said to me many years ago, you know, Cecily, a dialogue with me unwholesome, it is unwholesome. I really didn't like hearing that at the time. I was sure that with just enough self-criticism, self-contempt, put a part of myself in hell and then I'd be free. And then, unfortunately, part of myself is in hell. Oh, damn. But what about if I, you know, you've seen the movie Samsara? Beautiful movie, and it starts with, fairly early on, it is a quote that says, how do you protect a drop of water? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer at the end, on the other side of the rock, at the end of the movie is, by throwing it into the sea. By having perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You can't freeze an object, but you can acknowledge the flow. You can't freeze a mental object to get rid of it, but you can acknowledge that other states have also been flowing through you, and then that one already weakens, and it begins to flow. That's called spaciousness. You develop a spacious mind. Where you're not just, your mirror isn't that small, but it also includes everything else.
Mm-hmm.
All the objects in the room of your being that remind you of other states. anything else, you're still trying to change something. There's nothing to change. You just have to make the space bigger. That's all. There's nothing to change. You just have to not get fixated. Just don't think. It's not the self. It's the clinging to the self that creates the pain. Because then you can't remember other ways of seeing. It's quite beautiful. So in the Tibetan they say, allow the sins to liberate themselves. Which means, of course, that one has to take early retirement. Mm-hmm. Oh, damn. I was wondering whether I should do that. Oh, it would be late retirement now. Oh, damn. I'm less than 2 months away from being 66. Who knew one could lose? So late retirement too, you could do that. Medium retirement. Retire early for the next life. That's very good. And knowing that you can use the compassion. Compassion basically means spaciousness. Ability to use spaciousness. In the Vasuddhimagga, they say when loving kindness is fully developed, it becomes boundless beauty. Being able to see beauty everywhere. When compassion is fully developed, it becomes boundless spaciousness. How else can you be compassionate as you have the space to see? So when you see Chenrezig, the four-armed god of compassion, two of his hands are out there in the world, and the right hand, which is holding the rosary, is practicing loving-kindness, loving-kindness, loving-kindness. The left hand, which is holding the lotus that is grown from the mud, through the muddy currents to open into a new space is compassion. And that's how he works in the world, loving kindness and compassion. And in his heart, he's holding this jewel. And the right hand is sympathetic joy, and the left hand is equanimity. So that's equanimity. So it's loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. Which is how you work with the four elements. Loving kindness is earth, fully developed. The whole form is profound beauty. Why? Because it shows you the results of actions in this other thing. It isn't something to think should be different. It's something to be grateful. Oh, that I learned something. The beauty. Compassion, spaciousness, sympathetic joy, boundless consciousness, the realization that all beings desire pleasure, all beings are moving to awakening. It is the greatest pleasure. And through slow or fast means, all beings, just by the instinct for pleasure, will come to freedom. And like I was saying yesterday, that we all know that something we really wanted for ourselves and we bought 20 years ago, and then something that we really knew a friend of ours wanted, could be very small, could be very big, someone we love, and we bought it for them. That 20 years later, you look at those two things and maybe you remember the thing you bought for yourself, maybe you don't, but it doesn't evoke that warmth. But when you remember the one that we bought for someone else, it's not the object, it's the joy. Isn't that true? So altruism becomes the greatest pleasure. The more experience of life you have, the more altruism. It's true, isn't it? More altruism, the joy of how good you feel when you are kind to all beings. And how pissed off and justifying you get when you lose your temper. And then all the excuses, and then, you know, all the evidence, and then you have to keep counting up the evidence and keep a memory of it and circle dates on the calendar, and, right? Just to keep that energy going, don't you? Which doesn't exactly have a sense of spaciousness to it, does it? It isn't that I have to deny anything that has happened. It's after I have to see it as a part of the pattern of the whole weave. Because nothing is disconnected from anything else. There are no stainless steel ball bearings rolling through time and space untouched by anything. There aren't any. Everything is interrelated, interactive. Bunch of atoms bouncing. And you look at the atoms, they're not even. Oh! What kind of charges? Sometimes they're form and sometimes they're wave. Sometimes you can place them in space, sometimes you can place them in time. So anytime you fixate something, you are going against the flow of the entire earth, and sometime or other you're going to feel out of that flow. So you go to spaciousness. Because you're fixating time with an identity. So you go to spaciousness. If you get too drifty, go to time. But be able to let go of one and go into the other all the time. That's called yabim. That's that point of the cross, you know, the lightning striking the water of all possibility. Neither nor both. Either or, neither nor. So loving kindness is beauty, compassion is space, sympathetic joy is boundless consciousness. But the joyful quality that all consciousness is inherently aware. All beings are the Buddha. Everyone and everything is God. Sympathetic joy is boundless consciousness. Consciousness has two qualities in Buddhism. One is clarity, and the other is
clarity.
Emptiness means empty of a fixed identity, or you could say verbness if you have a problem with empty. And I'm just going to get that. And equanimity is resting peacefully in that state of boundless no-thingness, transcending subject object. Where there isn't any reason to hold on to the difference. Isn't that you don't see everything? Isn't that you're like, you know, the mere enemy of equanimity is called indifference. This is very like equanimity. But it ain't it.
Sometimes it's called a declaration.
Well, it's very straightforward. If you're clinging to it, it ain't equanimity. If you don't want to be disturbed, just like, you know, often what we think of as compassion is actually our reaction to anger, which my beloved teacher taught me, Ananda Bodhi, when we were first time in South America. I was walking down the street with him in Lima. That's when he was still a bhikkhu, and he didn't touch women. And if you wanted to give him a cup of coffee, he held one corner of the fabric and you put it on the other. And we're walking down the street, and this woman, this man comes out of this restaurant in front of us about half a block away. Very well-dressed man, falls on the sidewalk. I start running toward him. Ananda Bodhi put his hand out and stopped me by holding my arm. That totally shocked me. He said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm going to go help that man." He said, "Why?" I said, "Well, because he needs help." He said, "No, that's not why you're running. You're running because you can't stand it if it's your people." I used to really hate it when he was running. "No, I'm going to help him." "No, you're going because you can't stand the way it makes you." That's why we do lots of things. That's why you have to know that, and that's fine, but if you're interested in not being caught in habituation, you have to know that dislike and like are not enough of a reason. You have to look deeper. That's why we fall for con games, isn't it? Isn't it? Not because we want to give generosity, and here somebody's got this really elaborate con game, but we think we might as well be generous with them, maybe that'll help them learn sooner. That's not why. It's because they bring up some sense of guilt and not liking it. Isn't that true? Isn't that true? But it's true. To watch that sense of guilt, and not, which we don't like, and not try to get rid of it, then you're getting into quite different ground. You're not reacting just because of hatred. You're allowing the hatred and you're saying, "Oh yeah, this is because I feel guilty. Do I actually feel like giving to this guy or this woman? Is it because I wish to practice generosity I'm doing, or because I wish to feel I'm assuaging my guilt?" So like to be conscious of it is great. Doesn't mean you have to change it, you know? It doesn't mean you have to change your attachments, it means you have to make them conscious. If you're trying to change them, you're still just trying to get the right answer. And the real truth about the physical world, there's no damn right answer. The whole thing sucks, doesn't it? Show me a time you've ever been imperfect, and I'll show you a time where you're lying. Yeah, you've done as much, the best you can, but you don't have to say that with pride. You can say, "Oh, good. I've done as much as I am able. That must be good loving kindness. Because my aspiration was make everything all right, and I couldn't, of course, do that, but that didn't stop me from being generous." Right?
If you're not sure of your motive, if the person who's expressing the need still needs what they need.
Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Some of the most profound moments of insight have come to me from the times I was most in need and nobody was there. That I stopped looking for saviors, or looking to be bailed out, and I started actually paying attention to what I was doing. And that's why you want that compassion. Not just to assuage or to see yourself as good, but to see all of us as capable. I'll tell you quite frankly, when I think I'm a fairly good teacher now. Took lots of practice. But when I actually became a better teacher, was when I realized that everybody I was talking to had as much power as I did. Mm-hmm. Now, there are a lot of people who attend classes who really don't want to know that. So it's a tricky one to tap dance with. There are a whole lot of people. I used to wear robes when I first taught in Toronto. And then I noticed that everybody was very complimentary and bowed and everything with classes, but then they went out and partied. And nobody would invite me to the parties. Which was really a pleasure. And then they wouldn't talk as if there wasn't a party when they were in front of me, you know?